Brain makes any sound when it's working? Like, do you think there's any sounds going on in your brain?
No, it's not like a hard drive.
Well, I was just thinking while we were, like, doing our 10 seconds of silence beforehand, wonder if my brain makes any noise, like, just in its normal function that I don't hear.
I mean, if, like, a brain was loose and you threw it against a wall, it would, but, like, when it's just, like, functioning and you're thinking of things, it's not a hard drive, it's not like it spins up, I don't think.
Well, I know, but maybe there's some, like, weird glorpy sounds that happen when you're, like, thinking about stuff.
Maybe if you had, like, some crazy microscopic microphone situation, maybe there would be some sloshing around going on?
Brain sounds.
Neurons clashing together, or whatever they do. Expanding? Brainal waves? Brainal canals?
Coagulating.
Yeah, brainal canals widening.
And constricting.
Neural pathways?
As you breathe.
Like your river.
Every time you take a breath, you inhale and exhale, your brain gets bigger and smaller. That's why if you're holding your breath, you're dumber. It's the truth.
Dude, were you warned of that, like, when you were a kid? Of like, oh, if you hold your breath too long or
whatever? Yes, my mother always told me, Bianca, don't hold your breath because you'll get dumber if you do.
Really?
And frankly, toots, you don't have a lot of intellect to spare.
She called you toots?
No, that was a lie. But although my mom did think that the phrase was hold your breath and not don't hold your breath. And I believe to this day she still thinks it's hold your breath.
No, that's not the phrase.
Yeah, I know.
No.
But anyway, yeah, your brain does crazy things, and I'm sure there's a whole party going on there that we don't even know about.
Possibly.
That's your personality sphere. It's the center board, the motherboard of your life.
It is. I don't even know if I fully understand. Other than connecting all the other stuff, I don't really know what the motherboard does. I think the brain's probably more like a processor. Like it's doing the thinking, you know? The motherboard is kind of just connecting everything. Maybe the motherboard of the body would be like your vein system, where it's kind of connecting everything to everything. It's bringing blood and oxygen. Does oxygen go through veins? Oxygen's in blood, so maybe it's all in the same tubes.
Yeah, your blood just is like a way to transport oxygen throughout your body.
Yes. That's interesting. I guess I never thought of that. I don't know if I thought before that there was blood and then there were like air tubes going everywhere, but that's not the case. So when you breathe air in, it's coming in through my esophagus. It's coming in through my mouth. It's going down my esophagus into my lungs. How is it going from the lungs into liquid blood? Do the cells just kind of come in like sponges and just kind of soak it all up and then run around the body?
Yeah. That's,
being like, hey, delivering the blood and the oxygen.
They're all waiting there like a bus stop. And then every time you breathe in, they like hop on that oxygen bus. And then the next crew comes in for their turn.
Okay.
And it's like that. There's a tiny little blood. It's called a blood stop in your
blood
lungs.
Stop. Okay.
And that's where all your celluloids hang out. And they're all like, oh, man, bus is late today. I guess maybe Bianca's dying. It seems that way. All right, Frank, I guess I won't be seeing you tomorrow. We'll have to cancel our dinner plans.
I like that this is the voice you've ascribed to your blood.
That's my blood cells.
Oh, okay. I see. I remember Jim Brewer?
Yes, we were talking about him yesterday.
Weirdly enough, yes, Jim Brewer came up yesterday. That was his big bit that got him noticed on SNL, I remember, is it was one of those Weekend Update bits they would let like a new cast member do. And his whole thing was about the different organs, or no, it was like in your stomach, like if all the different liquor was a different like personality, where it's like, oh, tequila's down there and it's like partying, but then all of a sudden like whiskey comes down and it's like this, and then beer comes in and it's like this. It was this whole thing about like the different alcohols greeting each other in your organs.
Wow, can you imagine having tequila, whiskey, and beer in your body all at once?
It's almost certainly happened at some point in my life.
Wow, that's a lot of liquor to slosh around in there.
But it's always just like, okay, I'll start at a bar, like I'm thinking like college drinking, and I'd like start with whiskey, and then when I was like wanting to slow down or something and not drink whiskey, I would start with beer. But then tequila shots come around by the end of the night, and somebody's like, oh, I bought shots for everyone, and it's like, okay, well now I've got whiskey, tequila, and beer.
I'm like at the point in my life where like I don't want to pretend to like something that I don't like. I just want to enjoy what I'm doing and consuming.
Yeah.
So consequently, like I'm not gonna ever drink whiskey. I'm not gonna ever like. I might drink a beer or something, but I'm not going to, like, order a fancy beer, like, just to be cool or something like that. Like, if I have alcohol, probably it'll be in some fruity, easy-to-drink form. Fruity or minty or very refreshing.
I don't think I've ever drank any alcohol in an attempt to be cool. I've definitely bought alcohol because it was cheap. I've definitely drank to get drunk. But I have never bought or drank alcohol to be cool. Mm-hmm. I don't think.
Well, it's not that. I guess what I mean is to say I'm shameless about what I do like.
Mm, me too. I mean, like White Claw and like, you know, hard seltzer and stuff like that. Like, that's not considered like cool at all. But it's like I drink it all the time because it's extremely drinkable and it's just it's simple as hell and it's tasty. That said, my new favorite thing with alcohol, which you know, because you just bought me like an 80-gallon glass container of it, which I've been I'm about halfway through it now, is Johnny Walker Black. Mm. And like that is actually kind of like, that is the nicest liquor I've ever bought. Because like red is what I used to get on occasion if I was feeling fancy in college. And now it's like, I'm a grown-ass man. I could sip on some Johnny Walker Black at night. And I really like it. I really enjoy it. And it's not to be cool. I've never considered myself a cool man at any point.
You're the coolest guy.
I am not. Like, I may be a lot of things. Cool is not the word
you're
for it.
Cool as a cool. You're like a cutecumber.
Oh.
You're cool as a cutecumber because you're so cute.
I appreciate that. I'm not cool, though.
Yes, you are. I do. Everyone wants to be you.
And
wants you.
I don't know where this is all coming from. as long as you want me and these dogs are happy when I come home, that's all I need.
I know Gizmo wants your body. He's always going after your little tootsies, your little feet, your toes.
He is licking my feet constantly.
He's obsessed with your feet.
I kind of hate
so
it.
Weird.
Anytime I sit at the little island there and I'm eating, it's just like seconds before he's running up there.
It's just you too. He doesn't care about
it's my weird. I don't know what his deal is with that. But that's all to say that like I really have enjoyed drinking like a nice, because like I never got past that like college brain of like cheapness. You know, and maybe it's not a college thing, because, like, you've met my father. You know what he's like as far as cheapness goes. So maybe
Paul?
It's just...
Cheap?
Yeah.
Nah.
So maybe it's not a college thing. I've just always had that cheap gene, which we've talked about before when we first met, and you kind of got me out of that. And I am enjoying getting out of that. Not becoming, like, a reckless spender by any means, but, like, I can buy a bottle of Johnny Walker Black if I'd like to sip on that. You know, that's fine.
Treat yourself.
Yes, yes. So that's all to say. It's not to be cool. I just enjoy the sipping.
Well, anyway, the recent combo that we discovered at, like, most every bar will have this. Get a screwdriver, okay, and ask him to put a splash of pineapple juice in it. It's pure sugar. It's probably the most, like, one of the most calorically dense things you can drink, but...
Oh, no, it's not.
That's true. But
you had those milkshakes in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, we got those alcoholic milkshakes. Oh, my God, the grasshoppers. I had no rules in New Orleans.
Good. That's the place to not have rules. I hope you enjoyed your time
there. I just had to turn off that part of my brain.
I hope you're glad you did. Because
I am, because we have so many memories around all the fun stuff we ate.
it was excellent. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I feel like at a certain point, if you keep depriving yourself, you end up depriving yourself of memories and stuff like that.
I fully agree. And, find a moderation during the normal weeks and being at home. But then every once in a while, you got the special occasions and you can go a little nuts.
Yeah, it's totally fun. Yeah, that makes you look forward to something, makes things more fun, makes it, like, especially if you, like, anticipate it, it's like you won't beat yourself up about it because it's like, well, this was the day I had
to plan for it.
Yeah.
It's not like a surprise pizza showed up.
Yeah, well, that's where I feel like I'm open-minded about food, but I'm not at all spontaneous about food. Like, I'm fine having a pizza, but I have to know about it beforehand. Like, I'll plan my day around it. Like, if a pizza shows up, unless I'm already, like, super inebriated and all my, like, you know, I'm willing to just put whatever in my mouth. Like,
you mean
that
the...
sounds bad. Yeah. Like, whatever food is in front of me, you know what I mean?
Perhaps the wedding we went to in Kansas where we were very drunk and then 9,000 pizzas showed up. It was, and they kept showing up. Like, we would eat a bunch.
It was so much
fun. And
then
it's like, here's 40 more pizzas.
That was so much fun. I did not anticipate having so much fun at a wedding where I only knew one person. That was you.
And yeah, it was a good crew.
Met all your friends from college and, like,
right,
obviously open bar situation and, like, all these billions of tiny little pizzas appeared. And Dan and I were very drunk, but somehow, because we drank so much water throughout the night, we were not hungover at all. It was a miracle.
It was perfect.
It was great.
Perfect wedding experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Speaking of, I was going to try to do a segue. I kind of had one back then when we were talking about, like, you can let yourself go and you can go nuts sometimes.
Okay, here's a segue.
Okay.
Speaking of memories built around food.
I'm just struggling with the food part.
You're a child, a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
Whipping up some blue box mac and cheese for your younger brother. When your dad, the mechanic, comes home, your single father after your mother died and
neither of us have younger brothers.
Let me tell the story. Giving childbirth to your younger brother. Okay?
Okay.
So you got this dad, he's a mechanic or some shit, contractor, I don't fucking know.
He used to chase tornadoes.
Yes. And he comes home, you're whipping up dinner for the fam, even though you're like a 10-year-old boy. You got a great night with your dad and your brother. go to bed. Everyone says good night, peaceful night. Your little brother says good night to his little millipede named Curtis.
Yes. Your dad doesn't have a name.
Your dad is nameless.
Yes.
And then in the middle of the night, the lights come on and your whole world changes.
And your dad's sitting at the edge of the bed yelling, Frailty, I'm Bill Paxton at you.
And this is Frailty, my directorial debut.
Yes. Yes, that's right, folks. Hey, we nailed it, Bunk. Good work. Frailty by Bill Paxton, starring Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton.
Stop saying Bill Paxton.
I like saying Bill Paxton. I miss Bill Paxton.
I miss him too.
I have a real fondness for Bill Paxton as someone who was one of the first people in the movie Terminator. He was the lead in Twister, which I adored. He briefly shows up in Commando for like 2 seconds. He's got an iconic role in Aliens, Apollo 13. He was great. Weird Science. I was looking up his, because in my mind, I've seen Bill Paxton and liked him a lot in a million different movies, mm-hmm. but you were asking me, because I don't think you're as familiar with him, and so when we went into this, you're like, Bill Paxton, which one? And I was like, yeah, he was in, like, Twister's the big one, but you know, Aliens, he's the game over guy.
Yeah, I recognized him as soon as I saw him. I was like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I forgot, like, Weird Science I used to watch all the time when I was a kid.
And I've never seen that movie.
I wonder how it's aged, to put it lightly. But he's the, like, butthead brother Chet. In it, I remember him just being a total asshole in that movie. He was great. Yeah. And, you know, he can play like he's the, like, punk leader in Terminator. Like, he can kind of play. There's something about Bill Paxton. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to put my finger on it. Because, like, in this, other than the part where he's, like, leading, like, a death cult serial killer thing, he can play very normal, kind of, like, almost Midwestern father, mm-hmm. you know? There's something very normal about him, but he can also play, like, the leader of, like, a punk street gang or this crazy, like, alien marine guy or a total asshole, like, in Weird Science. I don't know what the thing is about Bill Paxton that makes him so likable.
And that is the perfect segue to announce your directorial debut, There's Something About Bill Paxton.
That's right. Yes.
He's like a chameleon kind of guy.
He is.
Like, he's kind of looks like an everyman, but he can have an edge when he needs to, and he has this kind of intensity, this underlying intensity.
Yeah.
That obviously really bubbles up in Frailty.
Yeah, and also, I don't know, True Lies, if you've ever seen
that. Ooh, I love
True Lies. He's the total, like, asshole guy that Schwarzenegger has the, like, dream about, like, banging his head into the car and stuff. Actually, my good friend Jason, he got to know Bill Paxton a bit near the end of his life, and it sounds like he was just such a cool dude.
That's
like,
awesome.
Just awesome down-to-earth dude.
So he passed away very young. I think he was like in his early 60s or something. He had like ruptured aorta and he went for open heart surgery and then he had like a stroke shortly after and he died, which is really sad.
I remember hearing about it and just being like, what? Mm-hmm. No. How did that, like, that one really bummed me out more than a lot of celebrity deaths in recent years because I really did just enjoy his work a lot. And it did just seem like a cool dude, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay, so I never heard about Frailty. I obviously never saw it because I never heard about it. I feel like it's just redundant to say it. But
Yeah.
I was very impressed by this film.
Yes, it is. It is a movie that is not, it's kind of old-fashioned in the way it's shot. There's nothing, like, crazy about the way, like, the directing or anything like that. It's a fairly straightforward presentation, but then the plot winds up kind of twisting in some interesting ways. I don't want to spoil the plot for those who might want to watch it. We're going to spoil the plot, but, like, not right up top. We'll give you
10 minutes of unspoiled podcasting.
Yeah. Well, we'll work our way kind of through,
well,
like, how
the movie.
It's
not like we ever spoil things on this podcast.
Yeah, except for every single thing.
Well, okay. I think that the straightforward presentation of this movie, I totally agree. Like, there's this, like, early 2000s, late 90s kind of approach to the directing and stuff. I feel like it really serves the movie because it goes to such dark places and, you know, to an extent, supernatural places. But the fact that it's presented so plainly makes you question what the reality of the situation is. Like, us seeing Bill Paxton's character, who plays the father of these two young boys, how he feels like he's getting messages from God. We're seeing it kind of from the perspective of Fenton, or who we think is Fenton, right?
Right.
And because of that, it is such a plain, like, just matter-of-fact presentation that makes him seem out of his mind. And I think, like, that movie obviously wanted you to feel that way, that he was, you know, just losing his mind, but...
Yeah, and speaking of, like, you know, you're seeing, like, a certain perspective, Maybe it's because we just watched Rashomon, but like the whole time.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, the whole time I was thinking like, well, hang on. We're hearing Matthew McConaughey's character, who is introduced as Fenton. We are hearing him describe this story to Powers Booth. Booth, another rest in peace. By the way, Powers Booth and Bill Paxton both in Tombstone together.
Oh, another brief Powers Booth aside. Due to the excitement surrounding this movie, I went back and I watched that scene where he's Cy Tolliver
in
Deadwood, and he's beating the shit out of
Kristen Bell.
Oh my god, that scene is so brutal.
Where he's just like banging on her head.
She's already like got an open wound in her head, and he's like just punching it repeatedly. Oh my god, it's so fucking dark. He's so just ruthless and sadistic.
There's such a menace to him when he wants to. Like, he can play just kind of the like straightforward like FBI guy, or like in MacGruber, he just totally understands that he needs to play the straight man general. You know?
I feel like Powers Booth. I mean. Amazing name aside,
yeah.
Just his appearance and the way he talks, I can't imagine him ever playing a role where he is not an authority figure. You know what I mean? He he's the head of the FBI. He played like Jim Jones in that Jonestown movie. Obviously MacGruber, he was like what was that CIA or something?
Colonel Faith.
Yeah. I can't imagine him ever being below someone or subservient to someone.
No, just the voice, the name, the look. Like, that dude just had a thing about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy, Powers Booth, just cool as hell. And he's good in this, too. It's one of the more, like, kind of, like, subdued roles you've seen him in. Although there's a twist at the end with him as well. But, yeah, so basically, Fenton comes in, who is played by Matthew McConaughey, to tell Powers Booth about, like, hey, you've been looking for this God's Hand killer. So there's been this serial killer over years and years and years and years. Like, they think there's, like, 6 killings, and they never found him.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, like, you know, naturally when a movie is framing, like, the situation in the very beginning, like, the opening credit sequence where there's a montage of, like, newspaper headlines and stuff like that, you'd think that it would be such a big part of the movie. But really, the active God's Hand serial killer isn't really the focus of the movie at all. And they don't really talk about his victims at all. Like, that stuff isn't necessarily explored. It's more the origin story of this guy.
A really good point. I didn't think about that because, yeah, the stuff, it's kind of like modern day. This movie's made in, like, you know, 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. That's when the case is open and everything. And so McConaughey is saying, hey, my brother Adam is the God's Hand killer. But then the movie is largely told through flashbacks where we're going to see Bill Paxton, their dad, kill a lot of people. I didn't think about the fact that, like, yeah, there was obviously, like, if there were ever a movie that would lend itself towards a prequel very easily, it'd be this, because, like, we don't even touch on all that stuff.
Well, it wouldn't be a prequel, it would be, like, a sequel. This is more like the prequel.
I guess, yeah, because it's showing the stuff. Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, we learn that, like, both the boys are killers in their own way. I mean, like, both of them are serial killers. One has a more righteous motivation, by anyone's standard, you'd just be a serial killer. We don't really see any of their crimes or anything like that. It's more just, like, focused on Bill Paxton and how his, like, twisted upbringing or bringing up the kids in this, like, twisted household where, like, they feel so helpless because they're young and, like, Fenton is completely helpless. The young boy is, like, completely buying whatever his father is selling.
Yeah.
And how that has affected them long term, which, of course, it would. I mean, like, you're seeing people get murdered, and in your mind, like, it's this mission from God, so it's not like you could just brush that off and, you know, have a normal life when you get older, you know? What I mean, like,
yeah,
you're either gonna go mad or you're going to start killing yourself.
Yeah, well, remind me to get back to it once we get to the end, but did you say both boys were serial killers?
Yeah,
they were.
Yeah,
I thought it was just remind me to get back to that, because then maybe I didn't catch something then.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. But anyway, yeah, so Powers is Agent Doyle, and so he's the one in charge of the, like, modern day or current day thing. But we flash back to 1979 in Thurman, Texas. And as we referred to earlier, just in the middle of the night, you know, Bill Paxton's character, who until this point seemed to be a totally normal dad, comes in, like, wake up, boys, I gotta tell you something. An angel visited me. And, like, we even kind of see him waking up, and he sees this, like, angel statue.
Reflecting, like, in, like, a trophy.
Yeah, and the angel says, like, hey, God is sending you a special mission. You need to kill demons. You need to destroy demons. They're not humans. They're actually demons. And I'm going to pass down 3 magical weapons. And so those wind up being, like, an axe, where it's like Paxton's driving and he sees, like, a beam of light shining on a barn. He grabs this axe. He gets this pipe, and he gets these gloves. And apparently the gloves, the angel told him, like, hey, you wear this when you take the people or the demons, but then when you need to lay your hands on them, you'll see their sins. basically.
Right.
So, yeah, you'll get like a vision of all the wrong they've done, these demons.
Yes. And so from Bill Paxton's perspective, or the father's perspective, he plays the father, unnamed, just dad, he is killing these people, but they're not people, they're demons. Although to anyone else, they just look like people.
Yeah, and that's what Fenton, the older brother, keeps saying. Is like, Dad, you killed someone. You killed a person, you know? And he keeps saying, like, no, no, don't you see? You can't see. Like, God didn't talk to you. You know, you don't understand. They're demons. They're demons. And, like, the younger boy is claiming that, like, oh, yeah, when you lay hands on these people, I can see their sins, too. I see the visions, too. But Fenton is just like, my brother is just buying into this stuff. My dad's going crazy and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it starts with just like a random woman that like Paxton drives to basically donks these people on the head with a pipe, puts them in a car, drives them to the barn. And then I remember the first time he puts the hand on her, mm-hmm. and he's like he's seeing all the visions and stuff. But we don't see it as the viewer,
mm-hmm.
but the lady was like selling it, you know, she was like, you know, and
well,
like,
I mean, she wasn't really selling it. I mean, the camera was twisting and stuff like that to make it seem really intense. But like,
that's true.
If you were in that situation, you were bound and gagged and your captor made a big presentation about putting his hand on you, you would shriek.
Would be like, yeah, tense and like not into, you know,
yeah.
I guess maybe it was the camera shaking and everything that made me think that she was more like, right. Like, you know, like, okay.
Yeah, I think it's worth just clarifying that the barn is like a shed where these killings take place, and they live on this like rose garden property
right next to this.
Yeah, because their house used to be owned by like the gardeners or something. So they kind of have access to this like remote plot of land where they can freely bury bodies and not have to worry about being seen.
Yeah, and speaking of not being seen, the second kill they do is this old guy in a parking lot of a grocery store in like broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, I think Fenton says like, Dad, you can't just grab this guy from the parking lot. Like everyone's going to see. And he's like, oh, don't worry, son. You know, like God's going to protect us. God will blind them. God mm-hmm. will, you know, and it just seems like a bold thing. Like, oh, he's just hoping to get lucky here. But that winds up playing into things later on too. But he has the son dig a giant hole to basically make a murder cellar.
Right. I mean, it's more like penance. Like, he wants the son to, I guess, maybe endure this, like, really physically challenging thing so he can, you know, I guess when you are vulnerable after, because, like, it's obviously physically exhausting to a point to do something as strenuous as dig a giant hole. But also when you get super physically exhausted and physically strained, you end up getting mentally strained, too. And you kind of become delusional or just more vulnerable and impressionable. And I guess it's his kind of way of having Fenton, like, kind of pay penance because he's so doubtful about his dad's story about, you know, slaying demons. So he says, you know, you're going to build this giant hole. And so Fenton does it, builds this giant fucking hole. It ends up being used as like a bunker.
Yeah. And he tells Fenton to like pray while he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And when it's done, he's like, I bet you didn't pray once, did you? And Fenton is like very much turning against like the idea of like God and prayer right. and things like that because of what it's doing to his dad.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
But yeah, the bunker, the first kind of victim there is Fenton finally just like runs to the police station and tells the story to the sheriff. And the mm-hmm. sheriff is, you know, small town sheriff in Texas in 79. He's like, all right, kid, whatever. Let's take you home. I'm going to go tell your dad about this. Like, they don't take it seriously at all.
Right.
But then eventually he's like, all right, this kid isn't backing down. Let's at least, you know, we'll go look in there or whatever. And Bill Paxton winds up killing him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because he starts like, you know, kind of like dry heaving and stuff. And you can tell he's actually really torn up about it because he really believes that this is the first time he's killed a person.
Right.
Because like everyone else has been a demon. And it's like, oh, my God, I killed someone. And Fenton's like, you've killed lots of people.
Yeah. Which, you know? He didn't really have to kill the sheriff because there was nothing in the bunker unless it was implied that the There was evidence of the murder that was committed prior, but it seemed like it was completely empty.
I think there was the part where Paxton was like, I bet you went down there and told everyone at the police station. And then the sheriff was like, nope, it was just me. I think that was Paxton being like, okay, well, then I just have one loose end here. You know, it's not like, because the only person that's even heard this story is this guy. Gotcha. So I can get rid of him, basically.
Yeah, which speaking of loose ends, one of the things that really bothers me is the sheriff drives over in his truck, drives to the house with, in his truck with Fenton. And, you know, the sheriff ends up getting murdered. What did they do with the truck? And no one's looking for the sheriff? Like,
you know, I remember you saying that while we were watching. And I was like, yeah, they don't really touch on that at all. But then because of some things that happen at the end here that we'll get to soon, it's like, oh, maybe there was some protections involved, like some, you know, divine intervention type stuff where it's like they can do whatever.
Well, maybe, but I mean, he wasn't a demon. He was just an average guy. So would there be divine protection in the case of just killing innocent people?
Oh, because God wanted demons to die. And I guess maybe in the greater good of serving.
Yeah. You know. So one of the darkest points in the movie is like shortly after this, where Bill Paxton has Fenton like trapped in that bunker that he built and just literally nails the trap door down so he can't get out. There's a little hole that his brother Adam like will pour water into so he can drink like one cup a day, no food.
Yeah.
And he's there for more than a week, like a considerable amount of time.
And then he finally does like kind of break down and it's like, he says, I saw God.
Yes.
And so he comes out and like Paxton is immediately just like, oh, you know, hey, that's all behind us. We're all cool now. Forget about the part where I made you murder people with me and locked you in a dungeon. Like he just acts like, all right, let's have breakfast, son. Paxton is really good at kind of that subtle stuff where it's like he seemed so crazed where he's like he didn't see any wrong and everything was great going forward. No more problems, even though there's all these murders. There's bodies literally buried in the Rose Garden and everything.
Yeah, it would be easy to play this off as like comically evil or like comically religious fanatic, but he really walks that line where it's like feels very realistic.
Yeah, he played it perfectly, I think. It was great. Like when he is talking about like God and demons and stuff, he does have that kind of wild eye, but he's not going like full on crazy, you know, villain.
Yeah, he just seems like someone who's genuinely believing his delusions.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Or are they?
And so Paxton's story ends with after Fenton has seen God, Paxton feels confident that like, okay, well, I can have you help me with this. And I'm going to give you this axe and you need to kill this demon here. He grabs some random dude, you know, and he just winds up killing the dad.
Mm-hmm.
So Paxton gets an axe to the chest. And then that's pretty much the end of
Adam, then the younger son kills the,
that's
kills
right.
The guy.
He finishes the guy off. That's right.
So, it's interesting. It's Adam kind of passes the baton or whatever.
The duties.
Continues the demon slaying, after his father is dead or it's.
My understanding is that Adam was the only one that ever killed people.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, so you know how they can only kill demons?
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the movie, who we thought was Fenton is actually Adam.
Yeah, so Matthew McConaughey is Adam.
Yeah, and he is the one who's like the righteous demon killer.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up killing Fenton because Fenton, you know, went into just serial killing people.
I didn't pick up on that at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he framed him for killing Powers Booth.
No, I thought he was genuinely like a serial killer.
No, I definitely got the read that Fenton, the real Fenton, not Matthew McConaughey, was fucked up after all this stuff. Like, obviously because of the upbringing and his family and everything. And, you know, he had all the things like up on a board and stuff where he was kind of like following the case and things like that. But I didn't like, and then, so basically I have to explain this part about Powers Booth. Powers Booth is going to the Rose Garden with Matthew McConaughey. And McConaughey reveals like, oh, I'm Adam. And he kills Powers Booth. He puts his hands on him. And it turns out that Powers Booth actually killed his own mother, something that was alluded to earlier.
Right.
And so Powers Booth is a killer or a demon. So he kills Powers Booth. He buries him in the Rose Garden next to everyone else. And like, yeah, that's the point where it's apparent that like, holy shit, all this stuff was real. Like the whole time we thought Bill Paxton was seeing these things and like, you know, full of shit about or just losing his mind or something. But it's all totally real, like the seeing the visions and everything.
Right, yeah, because when we learn that Matthew McConaughey was actually Adam, he puts his hand on Powers Booth or whatever, touches him, and that's when he gets that vision of Powers Booth killing his mom, which, you know, what are the chances that the head of the FBI would be a killer? But...
Well, and that's the thing, too, is like all the other kills of the demons and stuff were literally just like random people, and all of the planning was like, hey, I'm going to show up at your house and donk you in the head with a pipe. Mm-hmm. This one was this elaborate, like, Kevin Spacey and Seven type of ruse to, like, oh, and then I'll show up, and then I'll bring you to this place, and then I'll tell you this thing. Like, it was this whole elaborate thing where everyone else was like, dink, you know? Like, it was just a whole thing that the other ones weren't.
Yeah,
it was
hey, had God's help in blurring the CCTV footage so his face couldn't be seen.
Yeah, the other ones were like, let's go get the guy in the grocery store parking lot and just knock him out here. This was a far more elaborate ruse, you know? Yeah. So there's a convenient thing there going on for sure. But you said, so you just looked up something about Fenton?
Well, no, I was just saying because, like, you know, Fenton gets killed at the end by Adam.
Right.
And Adam only kills demons. And it's suggested that Fenton, you know, was killing people.
So do you remember when it was suggested that, like, because I apparently missed this entire thing of Fenton. But, I mean, it makes sense because he was only killing demons and because it was real. Mm-hmm. Adam's holy quest was real.
Mm.
And they showed Fenton, like, he planted the Powers Booth FBI badge with blood on it in Fenton's basement.
Right, and that note.
Yeah, and he was killed, right? Fenton was killed?
Yeah.
Yeah, so at any point was it explicitly said that, like...
I don't think it's ever explicitly said.
Okay, was he the God's Hand killer, do you think?
Well, wasn't Adam the God's Hand killer?
Well, that depends. I mean, if they were both serial killers and they were both uncaught...
Well, yeah, Adam is killing for divine purposes and he leaves those notes and stuff.
Right, but imagine, like... Oh, okay, so you're saying so the media and everything, if they've seen all these bodies show up, they all thought it was one killer or they
No,
knew...
it is one killer. Adam is the one killing people who he thinks are demons and he leaves those notes.
But you said Fenton's also a serial killer, right?
Yeah, he's a separate serial killer.
So there's two serial killers and then does the media think they're all the God's Hand killer or just the one with the notes?
Probably just the one with the notes. I mean, it doesn't really talk about the media a lot, but I would imagine just because if serial killers have different MOs, it generally distinguishes them from each other.
Okay. I didn't realize there were these like two dueling serial killer
things.
Well,
there's three. I mean, the dad.
Well, but at the time of like the present day stuff where it's like I didn't realize there were two active alive serial killers going on. I guess I just totally.
Well, yeah, I mean I could always be wrong, but that's what I thought.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so he kills his brother, and even the FBI guy who saw him come in, like, the day before, like, for some reason, you see him just being like, I don't know why. Like, I talked to the guy. I stood right here. I talked to him. I can't imagine what his face looked like. Oh, but shit, there's security cameras. We should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, like, the blurring on the tape is just, like, always just, like, one frame
right
over his face. And then that same FBI guy goes to visit him, and it turns out he's the sheriff, Adam is.
Mm-hmm.
And they shake hands. And Adam says, like, oh, you know, you're a good man, you know, agent. And so it's like he shakes his hand and knows that, you know, he didn't have the sins or anything like that. He's not
right.
a demon.
I mean, but I guess he's just a murder detector because I'm sure everyone kind of sins.
Yeah, all. Yeah. I guess it's just like, okay, you haven't actively, you're not a literal demon. So I really did like the, just the twist of like, holy shit, the like the crazy bad guy serial killer that claimed to see these things was not lying at any point.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, it's an interesting take for sure. You know, I'm never really in favor of like any kind of movie that's like, oh, God is real kind of thing.
Right. I didn't feel like it was trying to be like an actual like pro-God message or religion or anything. I think it was just a fun twist.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, totally. So that's why I was still able to enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, even if it is like a movie that's suggesting God is real, God is making you kill people, so.
Yeah, it's not I would not call this like a Christian movie or anything like that. It's kind of a fucked up, you know, murder tale.
It's more a fucked up murder tale than a happy Christian movie.
Yes, definitely. You know that Bill Paxton is drinking Hams the entire movie, and it was the same can every time because they could only find one that matched the like 1976 design. So they always had the opening happen off screen. They put the sound effect in, but he was always raising the exact same can to his lips. I thought that was fun. I thought this was really cool. I enjoyed this movie quite a
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, it was cool. It was interesting. It's definitely one of those movies that I never that flew under the radar, and you know, it was interesting. I love psychological thrillers.
Yeah, and I remember it coming up a lot when Paxton died, where everyone's like, oh, okay, well, everyone remembers, you know, Aliens and all this stuff, but like, hey, he directed and starred in a movie that was like really like I don't think anyone's saying this is like an all time classic, but I think they're saying it's like, hey, people didn't talk about this movie enough when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got elements of like The Shining and stuff, of like a family member, a father kind of losing it and stuff. But it's definitely got its own thing going on
right.
for sure. So, yeah, I would recommend checking it out if you'd like. It was on Amazon Prime that we watched it on?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So check it out on Amazon Prime Video if you are interested. But I would like to thank all of our patrons.
Thank you, patrons.
Patreon.com/paintingthestream. We got a handful of goodies for you for $5 a month. You get ad-free episodes each and every week. You get all your episodes a day early. You get them on Saturday instead of Sunday. You get access to our Discord, Rikert's Market. And also, you are getting for you, made for you, a Bonku.
A single Bonku for you.
Yes. Do we have one this week?
We sure do.
What do we got?
This is for our friend Nitin. I believe I'm saying that name right. It's, you know, interestingly, a name that is the same backwards as it is forwards.
Oh.
It's nice like that.
It's an I. It's N-I mm-hmm. and then I-N. Oh, mm-hmm. interesting. Okay.
Nitin, I hope I'm saying your name right. And if I'm not, you could just send me a letter. And when I open the letter, it'll be a big punch in the face.
Oh, geez. Boxing glove on a spring.
Yeah. Or like send... Call the Acme company to drop an anvil on me.
Yeah, piano.
Yeah. Put a skewer in me. I'm toast.
Put your favorite food along a highway until you run into a tunnel, but it's really painted on the side of a mountain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Nitin, this one's for you, bud. When Nitin returned, there was nothing but a note that said Croatone.
Croatone?
Yes.
What's a Croatone?
You never knew about Croatone, that lost colony, the Roanoke colony?
No.
It was like one of the early colonies in the United States. Like, I feel like it's off the coast of like Delaware. I could be way wrong about the location, but it was this little colony, and they were expecting like a shipment of supplies that was delayed. And when the supplies finally got there, everyone was gone. The only thing that was left was like the word Croatone carved into a like tree stump or something.
This is a real thing.
Yeah, and the whereabouts of this whole colony, no one knows.
Oh.
Yeah, you never knew about this mystery?
Never heard
of
that,
it's really interesting.
You're deep in the mystery world.
I do.
Unsolved mystery type stuff. Yes. Well, Nitin, I hope you enjoy that. Mysterious Nitin. Yes, I hope you enjoyed your Bonku.
As do I.
I'm going to talk about the Hugh game here.
We got a
question here from the Hugh game. On this card here, it says, what is your earliest memory?
Earliest memory is laying in my crib. And looking at the wall, and there was a nail in the wall, and it really scared me.
Did you cry?
Yes.
I thought your first memory was the bowl of ears.
Well, that was when I was a little bit older.
That's oh, okay.
Among my first. But I remember, yeah, that was, we were going to bring my brother to, like, wrestling practice that evening, and we were having tortellini for dinner, and it was the first time I ever had tortellini, and I thought it looked like a bowl of ears, so I just threw up in the bowl of tortellini, because I thought my parents were serving me ears.
How old were you?
I was very young.
Okay.
I was probably like 4.
Did they just throw it away?
I'm sure I didn't eat the vomit-covered pasta, Dan. But yeah, there's a lot of memories of me like being in my crib waiting for my breakfast bottle. I would always have instant breakfast in the morning. My mom would heat up milk in a sippy cup and put the breakfast mix in there, and that'd be And then I have bad morning breath, like milk morning breath. It was bad. Yeah, my breakfast bottle. I remember standing up in my crib and wanting my breakfast bottle.
I definitely don't have memories that young, of like crib young by any
means. Oh, yeah, I have crib memories.
My my only memory of my mom and dad being together, because they divorced when I was 4, was it was a Christmas and we were at the house on 93rd Street in Lenexa, Kansas. And there was like a stairs that went up, concrete stairs, and there was a quick like 90-degree turn going up to the house. And so we packed, me and my dad like packed a bunch of snow to make like a slide. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it was this huge, long thing, but, you know, I was a kid, so it was like 8 steps, you know?
Right.
And so I would go down it, and at the very bottom, there would be this like really gross clump of ice and snow that was all black, like it was underneath a car, and it would just be sitting there, and I'd be like, ew, and I'd like kick it out of the way or whatever, and I'd go up, and I'd go down the slide again, and it would be there again. And we're telling my dad, like, how did this get back here? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And I kicked it away, and I went back up, went down the slide, and it was back. And I was like, Dad, you've got to be putting it there. He's like, no, it just showed up. And like, must be like a 3-year-old or something. And this just went on and on and on until like probably 20 years later when I realized he was just putting it back there. So that's the earliest one I remember. So
that's cute.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
All right.
We got the Bonku. We got the Hugh game. Thanks, Tom Monda, for the theme song.
Thanks, brother.
You can follow us on Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if you're feeling so inclined. And thank you all so much for listening. We will be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.